Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Football Social Daily.
Hello and welcome to Tuesday's edition of Football Social Daily. It's your only place for daily Premier League podcasts, as I'm sure you'll know by now, because I'm sure you're all coming back here for what is not your first podcast. But if you are coming for the first time, then don't forget we are the only place that releases fresh, brand new Premier League podcasts every day of the week for all weeks of the Premier League season, which does seem to have gone on for probably about, what is it, like 11 months now? We're closing in on 10, 11 months, but as long as they're playing on the pitch, we're here talking about it and chewing the fat over the latest Premier League news, and that's what we'll be doing today. I'm Marley Anderson, and with me on today's podcast, we've got Ant McGinley.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, whenever you're hearing this.
And we've also got Stefan Armstrong.
Now then.
Now then. Now then, he says.
Game show style.
What an intro. Right, so let's start today with last night's action. Obviously, it's Tuesday today, Monday night game. There was only one last night, and it was the absolute thriller at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which was Spurs managing to edge out Everton by beating them 1-0 at home and moving up to 8th in the Premier League table. The only goal came from Giovanni Lo Celso's deflected shot slash own goal off Michael Keane. And let's be honest, there wasn't much to talk about. However, the best thing that happened was the... I don't want to call it a fight, because it was more of a minor disagreement, hyperbole into, you know, some sort of massive issue between Hugo Lloris and Heung-min Son. So I'm sure you've probably seen it on Twitter and everything like that, with all the funny captions and what have you of what they were talking about. But, Stefan, we've seen this before, haven't we? You know, players have little disagreements, and it's, if anything, it's just funny, isn't it? Like, it wasn't that serious, was it?
Honestly, I think the whole thing was a setup. I think Hugo Lloris realised how boring the first 45 minutes were, and realised that the blokes in the studio probably didn't have 15 minutes to fill. So he thought, right, let's create a little scuffle. I'll pick the smallest player on my team, so I'll go for Son, and yeah, get the people talking. It's quite entertaining, wasn't it? But I wouldn't call it a fight, I agree. But whatever happened, it worked, because that's it, actually. I think it was just great captaining, because Son came out in the second half and actually had 3 shots on goal, which he didn't have a sniff in the first half. So whatever happened, it worked. So big up Hugo Lloris, well done.
It wasn't, as we think back over the years, don't we, Ant? And it wasn't quite Lee Bowyer and Kieran Dyer, you know, scrapping and tearing each other's shirts off at St James's Park that year, was it?
But then I wonder if this is maybe like a symptom of like modern life and political correctness, in that nobody would ever think to do that anymore. I do object to you using the word action to describe it. It was a kind of fight I would expect to see in something like The Only Way is Essex, because they kind of fight each other by like he's just backing off, going, come at me, bro, but walking away at the same time. It did remind me of, I mean, going way back, I think it was one of the first seasons of the Premier League and the Merseyside derby, and I remember Grobbelaar having a go at Steve McManaman in a very similar way. My favourite one recently was Mitrovic and Kamara at Fulham.
Oh, my word. You don't want to mess with him.
But the thing with that was, the first thing was, it wasn't really, what we saw on the pitch wasn't really a fight, although something did happen. I think charges were pressed off the pitch afterwards. But it was over a penalty. And Mitrovic, deadly with penalties. And Kamara was like, I'm having this one. And did that whole sort of school kid thing of walking off the ball, refusing to let anybody have it, just turning his back, walking away to my ball. And then the best thing about it was he missed the penalty. Actually, no, that's a lie. I said that's the best thing about it. The best thing about it is the reason for the fight.
Go on.
And it was because they'd had a yoga session in training and Kamara had been rude to the teacher and Mitrovic had told him to shut up, and that's why there was beef.
He's a polite man with principles, is Mitrovic. Wow. So good on him too. You know it's a good fight when police get involved, like after the game, and somebody gets taken to some kind of like West London police station and charges are made. That's when it's been a good fight.
Do you know what? I don't even know whether there's anyone I would rather... I don't know whether I want to be friends with Mitrovic or just not know him at all, because he's one of them characters, isn't he? He's wired, isn't he? He's like, he's on the edge all the time. I seen him in the Leeds and Fulham game just a couple of weeks ago, like last weekend I think it was, and 2 minutes in he didn't get the ball off Ben White at centre back and just elbowed him straight in the head. And it was like, he didn't get sent off for it because the referee didn't see it, and it was like, has he just done that? And then the replays showed you and he just like properly dropped Ben White, and I was like, what is this guy? What does he have for breakfast? He's like drinking kerosene for breakfast or something. He's absolutely mental.
Mally, he's the sort of guy who you'd happily take to a countryside pub and sit in front of a warm fire with at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a winter's day, but you wouldn't ever dream of going to Yates's with him at midnight on a Friday night. Just don't do it.
I think he's setting himself up for a career post football. And the thing is, we've seen a lot of sports doing crossover. Well, possibly. I mean, somebody's got to fill the boots because Vinnie Jones is getting on a bit now. He obviously moved into acting, playing the hard man. And so there's that spot opening up for him. Or I'm pretty sure Mitrovic could move straight into the UFC.
I'd probably give him a title shot after two fights.
He'll be the next president of Montenegro, or at least general of their army.
100%. Well, that's impressive considering he's Serbian, Stefan.
Well, you know, it's all mixed up there, so you know what I mean. To all our listeners in Serbia and Montenegro, you know, I remember you pre-2006.
Mali, I'm not going to tell him. I'm just going to sit there. If he wants to be the president of Montenegro, I'm going to back him all the way. I'm not going to tell him he can't.
If he wants them to be one country again, I'm sure no one's hard enough to take him on or stupid enough to take him on. But anyway, that's Mitrovic. If he ever comes back to the Premier League, I'm sure we'll be talking about him for 15 podcasts next season alone. And he might do as well, because Fulham are in the Championship playoff places. So we'll see how that pans out, and hopefully we'll have something to go over next season when he drops off the Premier League and gets an 18 game ban. But on the let's call it a scuffle last night. Mourinho was immediately asked his opinion on it, and as is the way I think with most managers these days, he came out and just said it was beautiful. And he said he actually managed to blame himself, because he said that he said that he told the players that they didn't sort of care enough, and they need to show more heart and more fight and more grit. And do you think, Stefan, that this was just a way of his actions sort of ringing in, especially with the captain, you know, the captain being involved in it, Hugo Lloris? You think maybe he was thinking, well, this is what the gaffer wants, and he won't mind if I ever go at Son for not tracking Richarlison in the 46th minute?
Nah, I think it was more based on good management by Mourinho, to be honest. He's taken the conversation away from Son and Lloris and turned it back onto him. It's quite a controversial comment in a way, saying, oh, it was beautiful. He's basically just taken the heat off his players and moved it to him, and that's what all good managers do. And to be honest, Mourinho's done that his whole career, this protecting of the players behind closed doors. I think he might have had a word with them. But I thought he handled it perfectly, to be honest with you. And it kind of moved the conversation on a little bit. So there wasn't, in the post-match analysis last night after the game, there wasn't too much loitering on it. So I think it was job done by him. But yeah, I can see why he probably did want a bit more passion and a bit more animation, I guess, from his Tottenham players, because they've seemed pretty dull since the restart. So, and they're needing points big time. You don't want to finish below Arsenal. So I can see why he's maybe said that to them behind closed doors, but I thought he handled the situation well.
I think the reason why nobody dwelled on it too long in the post-match press conference was probably because everyone just wanted to log off and go to sleep after that game, because it wasn't exactly a one to live in the memory. It was a classic Monday night game. The Monday night games tend to be, you tend to forget they're on, and then you tend to watch them and think, oh, why did I bother watching this? I can't remember the last good Monday night game, to be honest. But yeah, that's the thing.
You shouldn't let Tottenham play on a Monday night. That's rule number one. If you're doing the Premier League fixture list, Tottenham always have to play on a Saturday or Super Sunday, something like that.
I'm sure Mourinho would still manage to moan that it wasn't quite benefiting him and his team in the way that he wanted to, if that was the case. And what about Mourinho then? He's got a very, very important win out of... It looked quite tough last night with Everton improving and getting better. But Spurs have managed to move up to eighth now. And the table's that close that it can look really bad one week, and then, you know, 2 days later it can look, you know, very good again. So do you think Mourinho is finally getting some sort of grip on the Spurs team and putting his stamp on it, or do you think it's still a little bit too early to tell?
I'm actually starting to worry that Mourinho's lost his grip on everything. I don't know if you saw at the end of the Sheffield United match, while Chris Wilder was being interviewed, he came in and gave him a hug and a kiss, and I was like, but this is Mourinho, what's going on here? And, you know, genuinely, I believe that he's probably more like that.
Is this the same manager that poked the Barcelona coach in the eye? Was it Tito Villanova? And then, what, yeah, is it five, yeah, 6 years later, he's hugging and kissing Chris Wilder? Wow.
I mean, the thing is that's an indication of, first of all, somebody that's not adhering to social distancing. And secondly, somebody that's a little more relaxed. You know, they've just gone, oh, okay, I've been beat. When actually we're looking at the media and kind of going, hey, you know, things are not looking great for Mourinho. He's come in mid-season. It's a bit of a mess. Like, the record's not great. They seem to be a bit hit and miss. I mean, he does seem to be getting the man management right with certain things. We saw the other week going into the game, he was like, you're going to see Harry Kane's going to score. And of course, Harry Kane scored. But then, to be honest, if Harry Kane's playing, the chances are he will score. So it wasn't that much of an act of clairvoyance. I think there is still a chance that Tottenham can get European qualification and definitely, you know, finish above Arsenal. I think that would be the absolute minimum for this season, to see them finish above Arsenal. Otherwise, they're going to be very disappointed. I think if they can make it into Europe, especially with Mourinho's success in cup competitions in the past, that's a really positive step moving forward for them. But otherwise, it's really... I mean, you're almost starting to... You get into that point of the season where people are looking at the clubs that are going down, the vultures are circling and going, right, who do we want? Like, do we want, you know, Cantwell from Norwich, that kind of thing. But Tottenham are straying into that position of being that team where, you know, other clubs are going to look at their players for taking, and we know that Daniel Levy is the type to sell. So I think European qualification is very, very important for them.
The derby next week will be massive.
It will. I'm just looking at the table now. 7th versus 8th. As it stands as well, 8th is enough for a European place, is it not? With Man City's ban technically, yeah, standing as we talk today, it stands. But yeah, I mean, 8th could be enough for Europe. I mean, that would be a good season for Spurs, I would suppose. But they're exactly level with Arsenal. There's a point separating them, but they're level on goal difference. So, you know, was it 5 games to go now? That's going to be all stakes on the derby next week. But We'll cover that next week because we're gonna move on slightly now to a man who's had a hell of a season. We're talking about, you know, Arsenal having an average season. One man who isn't having an average season is a man who scored his 100th Premier League goal at the weekend, and it's Jamie Vardy. So he got his 100th goal. He's had a bit of a drought lately with Leicester's poor form, almost costing them a place in the top three. But they're still hanging on to that, and Jamie Vardy has hit his 100th goal in the Premier League. And what is amazing about this is he only came into the Premier League at the age of 27. And I was doing some maths yesterday, and it dawned on me that he's hit 100 goals in 5 years. And that is obviously 20 goals a season. But if he had another 5 years in the Premiership, that's another 100 goals at that rate. At this rate, he would have been on 200 Premier League goals if he'd had a full career in the Premier League alone, and he'd managed to hit this, you know, level of form for the previous 5 years. And where does this rank him in terms of the great Premier League strikers? Because even though he hasn't been in as long as, you know, an Henry or a Shearer or a Rooney or a Van Persie or someone like that, his record stands up right up there, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think as well you've got to look at the team that he's playing with as well. Like all those other players that you mentioned, you know, are playing for like top teams. And of course Leicester have that league championship under their belt, but a lot of the time that they've been in the Premier League, they've been mid-table or around the bottom. So it's only really this season and the season they won the league that they've been right up the top. Also as well, I think I'm right in saying his record against the top six, he's got the most goals against the top six teams since he's been playing.
Yeah, I think that's one of them things that he always had, didn't he? He always had that amazing record. I think he scored like what was it, something like 20 goals in 25 games or something against the top six, which is crazy.
It's just amazing. And the thing is that the guy's so fast. I mean, and we've seen him do it. And hopefully, you know, they're going to be in a position where they qualify for Europe again, because I think for most people, those games of Leicester in the Champions League were some of the best Champions League games I've seen, just for the atmosphere, the energy, the excitement around it. And it's great, as you say, the story behind this guy, and it's been much touted that there's a script flying around Hollywood about his transition. but the best thing about...
Who would you get to play Jamie Vardy?
That's a really good question. That's a whole other podcast in itself.
Throw that out to the Twitter listeners.
The thing, we talk about his performance on the pitch as well, but I think we've got to look at his revolutionary attitude towards like nutrition and medical science. He's kind of like the opposite of Arsene Wenger. You know the way they credited Arsene Wenger with bringing broccoli to the Premier League and making people eat properly and train properly?
Jamie Vardy brought WKD.
Exactly. Literally, there was when he first went to Leicester, I don't know if you heard this story, he had a dead leg, and the physio couldn't figure out why it wasn't getting better. And he was like, usually I've seen like torn muscles heal quicker, and you've just got a dead leg. And the physio's to him like, you know, what are you doing? Yeah, and Jamie Vardy says, nothing I wouldn't normally do. You know, normally I'll go home, sit in front of the telly and drink Skittle vodka. And he was doing this after every game, and they pointed out the fact that the alcohol would sort of damage the healing process. That said, supposedly now, if you haven't read his autobiography From Nowhere, I highly recommend it. He likes to drink a half a Lucozade bottle, for some reason, of port the day before a game. Just to chill him out. And then his match day preparation, get this, 3 Red Bulls, a double espresso, and a cheese and ham omelette. That's what makes me run around like a nut job on a match day.
My God.
It's working for him, though.
Yeah, well, the guy's basically, I'm looking at that.
32, and he's absolutely lightning. I've never seen a quicker 32-year-old.
It's unfortunate that he's not been playing in the Premier League his whole career, but in a way, that kind of makes the whole story much more impressive. That's the only reason why there'd be a Hollywood story about this. If he was playing in his whole career, then it would just be, well, it wouldn't be spectacular, would it? It'd just be a very, very good player. But now he's a very, very good player with a very interesting story. I love seeing that clip where he's playing for Fleetwood Town, and he almost does a Maradona. it's brilliant. And just seeing the specific games, there's a lot of clips on YouTube where you can watch specific games where he got picked up. He was playing for Sheffield Club, and then it was Fleetwood Town, and then up to Leicester. It's a great story. But I'm just looking at the... because he's not played it, obviously, his whole career in the Premier League, I'm looking at the goals-to-games ratio. And there's only five players who have got a better goal-to-game ratio than Jamie Vardy. And they are the big, big hitters. Aguero, Henry, Kane, Shearer, and... Ian Wright. Yeah, he's a big hitter. Give it to him. And Van Persie. So there's massive, massive names below Jamie Vardy. Owen, Lukaku, Hasselbank, Fowler, Rooney, Drogba even. So, I mean, that just shows how good he has been.
I think it's funny that you mentioned Ian Wright, because I was just thinking about him then, actually, because there's a lot of similarities. Ian Wright didn't come to the top flight quite as late, but he was still playing Sunday League until Palace signed him. I think he was maybe 21. But he didn't really get his big move and his big break until that FA Cup run and Arsenal pinched him. So it was only really at the age of sort of 27, 28 that he went to Arsenal, which makes me wonder, you know, is Jamie Vardy going to be a future... personality on phone-ins and match of the day, which would really add a different element to
it. What I'm hearing there, Ant, is that you're saying my chance of playing in the Premier League isn't over yet. I can still do it.
It's your diet. That's what you need. Just pop the Red Bulls and the espressos, cheese and a ham omelette, and you're
Stephanie,
away.
If anything, mate, your diet's too good. You need to stay off the kale and, you know, the bananas and all that. You need to get on the port and the Skittles vodka. And the WKD, so there you go. Get yourself on that and we'll get you a run out.
Happily.
Also, Stefan, one of them things you mentioned before, I'm just going to... Yep. I have to pull you up on it. I just have to. You mentioned, you know, Vardy coming from the Sheffield Club, which is Stocksbridge Park Steels, and then going to Fleetwood. You missed out Halifax.
Are they Yorkshire? Are they not Yorkshire? If they're not Yorkshire, they're not real. Don't care.
Do you know the only reason I pulled you up on it is because I worked there the season Jamie Vardy was there.
Oh, brilliant!
So I was there for a few weeks before he got his move to Fleetwood. I was doing some work experience at uni, and I got to meet Vardy as this much hyped non-league, the best player in non-league kind of thing. It was Blue Square North at the time,
When you saw him, did you think that he would go on to be a 100-plus goal Premier League player?
No. You knew he was good. You knew he was good enough for the Football League, if you're honest. Because because of his pace. You've seen quicker, you've seen lesser players get to higher levels than him. But he was lightning quick, and he could finish, which was always going to get him a chance at a higher level. And then... you know, Fleetwood came in for him. I think Fleetwood bought him for £1 million, I think. No, they didn't.
You were still on work experience, being unpaid.
Yeah, I was unpaid, yeah. But he was, back then, he was just, you know, he's a bit sort of raw now, and he's been a bit media trained, which is fine because he's got enough of a personality to help him through that. But in those days, he was just all raw personality. Like, he wasn't media trained. I think there's a famous clip of him on YouTube saying where he's talking about his future. It was just the summer before I started there. And he says, Adam, the guy who's interviewing him, says, you know, Jamie, there's a lot of speculation about your future. Can you tell us that you're going to be with Halifax Town next year? And he says, no, I'm going to Ibiza. I'm going to stay for Ibiza Town. And it's just, that's just who he was. And he's still there now. He's obviously... he's got a few more million in the bank. He's got his V9 Academy as well, I think, giving chances to players that drop out of the system at youth level and find it tough to get back in like he did. But, you know, fair play to him. 100 goals, 32 years old. You can't take that away from him. But that's the story of Jamie Vardy for you. And that will wrap up. We'll have a quick break. And tonight, there's a few more Premier League games in this never-ending marathon of football we've got going on at the minute. But there's three more games tonight, but we'll get onto them just after this.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Get daily news and updates on your team via your Amazon Alexa. Just ask, Alexa, open Sports Social.
Right, welcome back to Football Social Daily. It's me, Marley Anderson, with Ant McGinley and Stefan Armstrong. We've just been talking about Jamie Vardy's incredible achievement to hit 100 Premier League goals and the scuffle slash fight slash slap fest that was Heung-Min Son versus Hugo Lloris last night in the Spurs game. But we're going to move on to tonight's action. But before we do, I can just tell you about our sports social skill, which you should always have by now. You should all have by now. That is the smart speaker. Everyone's got one. You know, the Alexas, the Google Homes. All you've got to do is download our skill from the Amazon store, which is free and doesn't take any sort of technological wizardry to install it on your Alexa home smart speaker. And all you need to do is ask for the latest Premier League team news and you'll get it straight to your smart speaker. So simply open Alexa and ask, what is the latest Man United team news, if you're a Man United fan, and it will tell you. And that's all you need to do, and that's all you should do, because it's the only place to get live updates on everything that's going on in the Premier League world. But tonight in the Premier League world, we've got three more games, two games at 6 o'clock and the game at 8:15. And we start with Crystal Palace versus Chelsea at Selhurst Park. And this is, to be honest, of the three, this is the one where there's not as much riding on it, purely because Crystal Palace are marooned in mid-table obscurity at the minute. There was a little bit of talk of Crystal Palace getting an outside chance for the for the Europa League places a couple of weeks ago, but three defeats in a row has put pay to that. And do you think Crystal Palace? My issue with Crystal Palace is, what are they? What are Crystal Palace? Are they? They've been a Premier League team for years and years now. They've never really been in relegation trouble. They've never really challenged for Europe. They always finish around 13th. What should they be trying to do in the coming years? Do they have to show more ambition? Do they have to spend bigger? What are they?
Absolutely, Palace should be aiming for something more. They should be aiming to get into the Europa League. I mean, we all forget, well, maybe we don't, but they made the FA Cup final a few seasons ago. It just happened to be the season that Leicester won the league, and so it kind of got drowned out by the news about all of that. they went down against Manchester United, but they still made it to the final, which is no mean feat. And of course, they've got the most experienced manager in the league, and possibly the most experienced manager they could possibly have in Roy Hodgson. You know, his experience, when you look at the length of his career, it's probably sort of Ancelotti plus Guardiola combined. Not necessarily for his trophies, granted, but in terms of for where he's been and what he's been through and what he's seen. And so I would hope that they're using him as a building block. I don't think he's going to be at that club for very much longer, more because of his age than anything else. Also, they've done okay considering that they've lost some great talent in the likes of Wan-Bissaka. They did hold on to Wilfried Zaha, but I think it wouldn't be such a bad thing for Crystal Palace if somebody like Zaha was to leave, because really I think now the way the game has moved in the last few seasons especially, it's not so much about having superstars in your team, it's about having a team that works really well. And so maybe actually something like Zaha leaving and going somewhere else would be the catalyst for them to become a more cohesive team.
During your introduction, Marley, you were kind of saying, what are Crystal Palace? I think you nailed exactly what Crystal Palace are. They're a mid-table team. No more, no less.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it, though? Like, How long can you go of being a mid-table team before you have to decide, is this for us? Do we want more? Are we just waiting to be
objection,
relegated?
Objection. What's your team, Marley?
Well Newcastle. But we have the odd relegation to spice things up a bit, so that's what keeps it.
Hey, well, you could get the FA Cup this year. Oh no,
that was a low blow. It's a good job we're not in the studio, Adam. We'd be coming to blows right now, and you're a lot bigger than me, so you'd probably win.
Come at me, bro.
but that's my thing with Palace. I mean, should they be aiming higher, Stefan? I think, you know, they've got Zaha, they've got Van Aanholt, they've got a few decent players. They've got Gaeta, the goalkeeper, that seems pretty good. Should they be trying to push. I mean, if the likes of Burnley can get into the top eight, then can Crystal Palace not?
I don't know. I think these teams are all in the kind of in the same mix. I mean, to my knowledge, I don't think Crystal Palace have ever won anything. I think they've made it to a few cup finals, league cup finals, or maybe even semi-finals, but I don't think they've ever won anything. And in terms of a top division high finish, you must be going back at least 30 years until they've had a decent finish there. So I think Crystal Palace, it's difficult because they're a team that all my life have yo-yoed between what was Division 1 and now the Championship and the Premier League. So I think if you're a Palace fan, I think you're quite happy with a little bit of mid-table obscurity. I think that's quite nice not to be involved in a big relegation battle every year. And to be looking up is pretty good. If you look at the players on their roster, though, I'm not sure that they can really get into Europe. Their top goal scorer is Jordan Ayew. And then after that, it drops down massively. Like Zaha has only scored 3 goals this season in Premier League. So I think they're doing well being where they are. Roy Hodgson, if we're being honest, isn't going to take this team forward. I think he's just a really good, safe pair of hands to keep them where they're at. And I think that's all right for Crystal Palace fans right now, surely.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there, to be honest. So Roy Hodgson is a safe pair of hands because they did try and go to the more attractive sort of style of play by appointing Frank de Boer back in 2017. I think he lasted, was it 5 games?
That was a disaster.
I think it was. He's lost 4 of his 5 games and they sacked him, you know, sometime around, I think it was like September or maybe early October sometime. But they did, to be fair, they did go from Sam Allardyce to Frank de Boer, which was like going from having a Lada Riva to a flipping Ferrari and expecting it to be the same kind of thing. In terms of the way football
finance goes right now, like if you're a team like Crystal Palace, Watford, definitely a Bournemouth, a Norwich, the cost of going down is massive. You can't really afford to go down, so you don't really want to change things up. But just a bit of security, playing steady football, mid-table is heaven right now for Crystal Palace.
Yep, fair enough. So what about Chelsea? They're playing Chelsea tonight at home. Chelsea are just about hanging on to the top 4 after that loss to West Ham last week. They're 4th, 2 points above Man United in 5th. So if they manage to get shocked tonight and Palace pull off a victory, they could slip out of the top 4 come Thursday night when Man United play at Aston Villa. But what about Chelsea, Ant? Is this a shoe-in for them? You wouldn't expect them to lose points at Crystal Palace,
No, but then I didn't expect them to lose points at West Ham either. And they just couldn't defend. They couldn't handle Antonio. I don't think that Crystal Palace have that same threat up front or from set pieces. But I think that, Chelsea should have enough in the bank for this. And quite frankly, the position they're in, they can't afford to slip up because literally where there is the difference between a win and a loss could be Champions League and Europa League. It's just 3 points between Leicester, Chelsea and Man U. Wolves sniffing around at the back. They've slipped up recently, obviously. But really, you know, they need to keep that pressure on. It looks like Leicester have dug themselves out of a bit of a slump that they came into after the restart. And I think from Frank's point of view, you know, he's done really well this season. There's there's a really exciting project happening at Chelsea. The players that they've already signed up for coming in the summer, the young players that they've got coming through the side, the way that he's blooded the likes of Pulisic, who's, you know, when we have seen him, he's been, you know, a match winner. And there's something really exciting. And he's even getting great performances out of the likes of Willian, who are certain to leave, although that seems like a really mad thing to be doing, the form that he's in. So I think as well, I mentioned this the other day, that Frank's really going to want this because, you know, it's his first full season in the Premier League, of course, second full season in management, and you know, previously when he's been on the cusp of getting something, he just missed out with Derby. So, you know, if he can do this, I mean, it's a successful season, whatever, but Frank's really going to want this. And, you know, he's been a successful player. He's been a winner. And I think already we're starting to see that's going to carry on through his managing career as well.
I think he's playing the role of expectation really, really well at the minute. The way he handles himself in his media interviews, I feel like there's an expectation that Chelsea should be in the top four this season. They've deserved to be there. Although, in reality, they've yo-yoed up and down and they're a very young team. And Frank Lampard, I think, will be over the moon if they get Champions League football. But the way that he's kind of flipped it and portrayed them as a top four team, we should be challenging for that. He's done his job there and really got them players motivated. They were rubbish against West Ham, though, so they can't do that again. I mean, it will be so interesting if Chelsea lose tonight and Arsenal win. It just tightens the whole thing up again. Which is what I want for four games left in the season, 5 games left. So bring it on.
Well, if Chelsea do win tonight, they'll move on to 60 points and they'll go above Leicester, who go away to Arsenal. Just as Chelsea are finishing their game, Arsenal will be preparing to kick off against Leicester. So that's another top four game. But what about that? I mean, Arsenal on a great run at the minute since losing to Man City. They seem to have turned it around and got a few wins, and everything seems to be sort of heading in the right direction again. Aubameyang scoring, and Saka signed a contract, and so has Martinelli, for example. But Leicester, this is massive for Leicester, isn't it, Ant? I think with the table as it is, Leicester will drop out of the top four if they don't win tonight, and Chelsea do win. So this is huge for Leicester, isn't it? To think that it's almost like their season comes down to these last four games, and that's a result of the dip they had over Christmas and January.
I think there's an interesting dynamic here in that it's almost like these sides swapped places recently, because Arsenal were always guaranteed to be a top four team, and it looks like Leicester are auditioning for that spot to be able to be up there and to be challenging away. I think coming back from the break, both teams suffered early on. But ever since that loss at Man City, Arsenal have looked really, really good. I mean, the other thing that's happening there is you're starting to see what I think is the impact of Arteta at the club. I mean, he's still very early into his tenure there, but we know from what we saw with Wenger that Arsenal is a club that likes to give their manager, you know, almost total control. And I think that's starting to happen. I mean, we'll obviously see in what brief summer transfer window that we get. But what's been very interesting to me recently is the way he's handled Guendouzi after he was kicking off quite a bit on the pitch and acting up. And Arteta and Edu had a meeting with him and weren't impressed with his answers. And so Guendouzi has been told he's going to train on his own for 2 weeks. And a lot of people are seeing this as possibly him being on his way out. And I think in terms of the stuff that we've seen on the pitch, that there is something to cheer about from Arsenal fans. I mean, I know we often relish as non-Arsenal fans in enjoying seeing Arsenal fan TV and people getting very angry and very annoyed. I'm really worried about that, because with Arteta in charge, we might see them actually being quite happy and having nothing to complain about.
That's a good point, to be fair.
Please, let's get Arsenal fan TV off the airs. Come on, Arteta, play well.
I'm fully in that camp with Stefan, to be honest. I'd love to see that go down the drain. It's such a toxic channel for that club. I think it's doing so much bad stuff for what they are. But Stefan, what about Leicester? I think, you know, we mentioned Vardy before, 2 goals against you know, the weekend, getting to his 101 goals it is technically now. Do we think he can keep up that record against a big six club and hurt Arsenal tonight?
Don't see why not. I think the game tonight's going to be a battle of the top scorers, both wanting a golden boot. Let's see who can come out on top. I fancy Leicester a bit more than Arsenal, but to be honest with you, apart from the Leicester's last game, there has been a dip of form there, notably. A, since Rodgers signed the contract, and B, since the restart. And Arsenal have seemed to kind of steady the ship a little bit. So, come on, let's be honest. Has this got 0-0 written all over it?
what a battle of the a battle for the golden boot settled by a 0-0 draw. That yeah. would sum up the.
Well, I say that because last week I absolutely I tried to make a strong point against Jim that West Ham should go down and that they're going to get battered by Chelsea. And then they go and win 3-2. So I've stopped making any sensible predictions on any football games now. So this is going to be 0-0 and Vardy and Aubameyang both to score a hat trick.
Okay. To be fair, the our track record on the podcast of predicting results is questionable at best. I think it's a genuine occasion when somebody gets something right and it actually comes to fruition. It is a genuine occasion. There's almost like fanfare in the office the next day of, did you actually see what that game last night? I actually predicted it to be 1-1. And then it's like, Christ, do we know what we're talking about? Or do we just record these things and hope people don't act on our predictions in terms of like betting and stuff? Yeah, do not put any money on what we say because we're not responsible. We don't take any responsibility for you losing any money that you might put on a 0-0 draw that Stefan's just tipped. So that's the battle for the top four. But let's switch our attention to the bottom of the league now, because we've got I would call it a 6-pointer. However, I mean, you could probably give Norwich 6 points and they'd still be bottom of the table. But it's Watford at home against Norwich tonight, and I'm just looking at the table, and if Watford manage to win, Norwich could be relegated by Saturday. If they lose both tonight and on Saturday, they've got West Ham on Saturday at 12:30. So time's running out for Norwich, isn't it? And Watford could move 4 clear of Aston Villa in 18th. So do we think tonight, Ant, that it could be a case of we finally see some daylight becoming between the bottom three and the sort of pack just above them?
Never mind talking about Saturday. I think some of the Norwich players and possibly even the fans will be kind of wanting, you know, they've already accepted that it's happening. And I don't think it's particularly helpful to say, well, it's still possible. It's still possible. You know, Daniel Farke's done an amazing thing with Norwich. They've played some amazing football. I mean, I'm still wincing from when they turned Man City over. And that was a great game. And yeah, all right, when you look at it, you know, they had 3 shots, scored 3 goals. And we were just wasteful in our chances. But still, what a result that was. And they'll be, I think they've won a lot of fans over about the style of football that they've tried to play. But it's not been enough for them. And so I think if there was an option to just eject right now, they would do that. As for Watford, Watford have really disappointed me, actually. They got that real new manager bounce with Nigel Pearson. And obviously, great victories.
You're a big fan of Pearson, aren't you?
I am. You know, he had that great victory over Man United and over Liverpool as well. I mean, here's the crazy thing. Like, if Watford go down, we're going to have a season where the two of the relegated teams have beaten the... In fact, actually, no, if Villa and Watford go down with Norwich, all three relegated teams will have beaten either the champions or the champions on the way out. How mental is that for the Premier League? But yeah, I'm a big fan of Nigel Pearson. I think he doesn't get as much credit as he should for Leicester's championship when they won the Premier League, because he'd saved Leicester. They'd had that very difficult time down around almost being relegated, and he just turned them around, and he had an amazing year, an amazing season that led them to be runaway champions. But that, unfortunately, he'd had to leave in the summer before, not necessarily because of his own doing. He's very combative. He's got that kind of spirit. He would do well as a Tottenham goalkeeper. He's got that kind of shoutiness about him. However, it's just not happened for them since the restart. And you look at all the teams down there. I think, what is it, like no win between any of the bottom four teams since Project Restart came back. And I mean, the thing is, even if they lose tonight, the real 6-pointer comes up when they take on West Ham mid-July. Although by that point it might be too late, because West Ham seem to be having a little bit of a resurgence. So with Newcastle and Arsenal, which neither of which are going to be easy games for them. You know, this, they have to win this. There's no way around it. They have to go in. They have to win it. If they don't win it, they're in real trouble. Only 1 point ahead of Villa and Bournemouth. And looking at the fixtures, you doubt it's going to be Bournemouth. So it's between Villa and Watford.
Yeah, I think you're just about right there. I think if Watford don't win tonight, they're right under the. It's a massive missed opportunity, isn't it? But Stefan, what about Norwich? Ant's just talked there about their style of football, winning a lot of plaudits. I was thinking last week, we could be in this weird situation where Norwich get beat, you know, close to 25 times in the Premier League, go down bottom of the league, and three of their back four could get snapped up by Premier League clubs. As in, you know, Ben Godfrey's been, you know, he's got potential. Max Ahrens is quite highly rated. And Lewis, the left back as well, is got a few suitors as well. Same with Emiliano Buendia. So there is talent in this Norwich team, isn't there? It's just, it's a weird situation where they can't knit it all together for long periods. So where do you think it's gone wrong for them?
It's a difficult question. I think, first of all, Norwich are already down. There's no point even talking about them trying to stay up. But they've scored so many goals compared to the teams around them. Team Rapuki's got 11 goals. Todd Cantwell's got 7 goals. So they're scoring a lot of goals, especially compared to Watford, who Troy Deeney is their top scorer. I think he's got 5 or 6. He's scored hardly any. And it's the same with West Ham. They've scored few goals. Bournemouth have scored few goals. So you've really got to point to the Norwich defence there. I know you just named 3 players who have bright prospects and they're talented. But is there a lack of leadership at the back there? Because they're letting in an awful lot of goals. And a team who's I think Norwich have got 2 players who've scored between them 20 goals. That's usually not form for somebody who's rooted dead bottom of the table. So there must be some lack of spine in that team, lack of leadership, or lack of maybe aggression almost, which you need to stay in the league. And I think that's been Norwich's problem.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I think if the 3 players we mentioned, Lewis, Ahrens, and Godfrey, the 4th member of that back four is usually Grant Hanley. And if we're being honest, Hanley is experienced, but he's a championship defender at best. I think he's knocking on a bit as well. He hasn't got much pace, and I think where they struggle is at the back, and they don't really have, like you say, you know, they've not got much chance of, well, they've got no chance of staying up really, haven't they? They could be down by Thursday night. I think if we look at the fixtures at the minute, you know, if they lose tonight, if Norwich lose tonight and then they lose on Saturday as well, that's it. That's cut and dry, and they're gone from the Premier League for another few years. But let's see what they can do tonight. That's the end of the games tonight. We've got Watford Norwich at 6 o'clock, Crystal Palace Chelsea at 6 o'clock, and then Arsenal take on Leicester at 8:15. So you can see then that's the latest part of the ongoing marathon that is Premier League football. There's another 4 games tomorrow, there's another 3 games on Thursday, and then we've got a day off on Friday. But we'll be bringing you every bit of fallout to the action, every preview to every game on the Football Social Daily podcast, which you should have already subscribed to. But if you haven't, then get on it. What are you waiting for? Come on, you know, we're here for you all the time. So get subscribed on Spotify, on Acast, wherever you get your podcasts. Just download us, search Football Social Daily, and hit the subscribe button, and you'll never miss a show. But that's it for today, and I'll say thank you to Ant McGinley.
Cheers.
And thank you to Stefan Armstrong, who've been,
cheers, Malik,
excellent as ever. And this lovely bit of insight, what have we done today? We've praised Jamie Vardy, we've slagged off Son, we've slagged a little bit of Hugo Lloris, we've said Norwich are dead and buried, which means Norwich are going to win 6-0 tonight, and none of us will be on tomorrow, so you can't give us any stuff.
Mally, before you sign off, give us your favourite Premier League fight, or even just fight in football. Full circle.
You can't look past Bowyer and Dyer physically.
Yes!
You know, fighting on the pitch and having to be separated by Gareth Barry, who wasn't even playing for us. He was playing for Villa at the time, obviously. And Alan Shearer, who looked absolutely fuming at the pair of them. And God knows what happened in the dressing room after that. But yeah, that's one of the darker days in the image of Newcastle.
My favourite bit about that whole thing was the press conference afterwards, where Graeme Souness dragged them in, like two schoolboys apologising in front of their mum.
Yeah, and the irony of it being Graeme Souness as well, who pretty much had fights every week during his career. Anyway, but that's it. That's it for today. We could be here talking for ages about Souness and fights and all sorts, but we'll save that for another podcast. So join us then. Join us there tomorrow when we'll be looking back at tonight's games and forward to Wednesday night's games on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.